This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning in today to WNRN and folks at Lexington's 95.3. One of those topics today that always gets folks wound up and running loud and quick, the Western 29 bypass here around Charlottesville. And our special guest expert on the topic, Sean Tubbs from Charlottesville Tomorrow. He's a senior reporter and has been covering this topic for how long now, Sean?
6 years.
6 years.
Yep, so 6 years.
Although the topic itself, the Western 29 bypass, you said we were talking about first mentioned like 1979, 1980.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I've been working for Charlottesville Tomorrow now for 6 years. So one of the very first things I had to do was research all of the properties that were in the right-of-way. Because at that time, the road was dormant, but there was always sort of the sense that at any point it could come back to life. People didn't think it was, but here we are in 2013 talking about it still.
So 7 years ago, 6 years ago, you're saying that when you were doing your studies, it was a dormant project.
Yes.
And that's because that, and now it's back to life because 2 years ago.
Yep. So 2 years ago, this month, so this week or so, the Board of Supervisors had a late night vote, approximately midnight or so on June 8th, 2011. And the decision was to direct the two members of the Board of Supervisors who were on this transportation committee to basically support allowing construction funding to go towards it, which was sort of the block that kept the road from not being planned, from not going forward. It had received its federal approvals in 2003, but around that same time, this thing called the Metropolitan Policy Organization, the MPO Policy Board, came up with this rule that said, okay, there is this road, it exists, but we're not going to allow, as the local body, transportation funding to go towards paying for it. And so 8 years later from that, 2 years ago from now, that was overturned. And here we are now, still waiting for the road to get its next federal approval.
And for those who aren't aware, and again, we'll be sort of filtering through some of the history of this throughout the hour. But one of my least favorite parts of this project, whether you stand, you're a proponent or an opponent, one of my least favorite issues is that to make this go through 2 years ago, the Albemarle Board of Supervisors sort of at the end, at midnight of a meeting, after the majority of the citizens who had shown up to attend discussed this topic that wasn't even on the agenda for the night and said, oh, by the way, we'd like to bring this back up again. And in a sudden late night issue, it was voted and the vote was changed.
Yes. And it was because a week before, the same exact vote had been a 3-3 tie. And in that intervening week, somebody got to Supervisor Lindsay Dorier, who is now off the Board of Supervisors. Somebody got to him and he changed his vote. He changed his vote because he was promised funding for other regional transportation projects. And I should add that those projects have mostly all been funded as well. So that part of the deal was made. He changed his vote and this project moved forward.
Again, our guest today, Sean Tubbs. He's from Charlottesville Tomorrow, the senior reporter. He's been covering the Western 29 bypass for the last 6 years. Many of our listeners are probably familiar with the Western 29 bypass, at least in some sort of basic sense, as the fact that it is a well-discussed issue with both strong opponents and proponents of the event on both sides. Some of the little basic for those of you who new to the area, those who are listening in some of our in the Lynchburg, Culpeper area who may not be as familiar or just turning to WNRN, although a little bit of familiarity with the Western 29 bypass, originally proposed in the late 70s to relieve congestion on Route 29 north of Charlottesville, 6.2-mile limited access road to provide bypass for Route 29 through traffic around Charlottesville metropolitan area. The bypass would allow people to avoid approximately 13 traffic lights along one of the most congested parts of Route 29. That was a little cut and paste job from things I had found on the Charlottesville Tomorrow website. Sean, let's jump into some of the most, the more recent issues. The proposed project was put forth by the organization of Scanscar. What's the proper name?
Yes. So this project, it's the joint team of Skanska and Branch Highways. They are the, it's a consortium, it's a team of companies that teamed together to submit what ended up being the lowest bid for the Western Bypass. They have a $136 million contract signed with VDOT to both design and build this thing.
And the more recent news is that after 2 years ago, this this proposal from the Skanska Branch Consortium was accepted. Now it's being changed or has been put forth for some important and what many would say needed changes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's important, you know, and this is where it gets a little bit procedural, but it's important, I think, to point out that VDOT, neither VDOT nor Skanska Branch can do any design work at this point because they haven't received, from the Federal Highway Administration, they haven't received what's known as a finding of no significant impact, a FONSI, if you will. They can't do anything more until this happens. They had originally scheduled, this was originally supposed to have been submitted by, approved in January. So Skanska Branch is waiting to do this work that it can't do. Meanwhile, VDOT does have the has to get another permit from the Federal Highway Administration for basically what's known as an interchange modification report, because they're going to change conditions on existing 29215 at St. Anne's Belfield. This is just north of the Leonard Sandridge Road that goes to the University of Virginia's north grounds. They're going to change that, but you can't just change that with any design. You have to show that the design that is there is going to work, and it's not going to make conditions worse on the existing highway, because that's not really the point of this. You don't just build, you can't just build highways and hope that they'll connect, and you have to study them. And so as part of that, they have to do a couple of different alternatives, and they've produced these alternatives, which are going to so the Skanska Branch is basically a you would come off of this you would come off of 250 and go up this very large steep ramp to get up to the bypass. That's the Skanska Branch design. Internal documents show that that doesn't work. That's not going to work. So
well, hang on just a second. So there needs to be a new report done by the Federal Highway Administration, correct?
They have to approve it, yes.
So why wasn't this done a long time ago, or minimum shortly after the 2 years ago when the original design was accepted by VDOT?
Well, I guess it's because the project never got to this point before. So the project is at this point, but it's also going down two concurrent different channels because you know, I mean, like, I think anytime you do something of this magnitude, you have to have federal approval to do it. And you can't just dust off a 2003 approval and just apply it to 9 years later, to 8 years later. You have to check and see if anything has changed in that time. So that interchange modification report probably would have happened in 2004, 2005 if the project hadn't been I guess thwarted at that time, I guess, by the people who didn't want it built. So that's work that still has to be done. Other things that have to be done, and this is just a quick aside, they still have to purchase all, about 36% of the right of way. So they don't own all of the land yet. They own most of it, but they don't own all of it. That's going to cost, some money as well. So there's all these different things that would have happened in the past, but at the time it was passed back 2 years ago, the Secretary of Transportation, Sean Connaughton, had basically bragged that this thing was going to get under construction by the end of the year. And there's just, I think he set expectations so high when this project has a long history of opposition and the opponents of it had been gearing up that entire time. And they sort of, I guess it's probably fair to characterize it as the latest thing that's really holding it up right now is the discovery of the cemetery off of Lambs Road, which is right in the center of the bypass. It's pretty significant, and it's holding things up.
Now, why? All right, again, we're talking about the Western 29 bypass around the city of Charlottesville. It has been a request for the folks south and north of us for quite some time. The folks in Lynchburg have come out and made it very clear that they think this is an important project to put through. They have Lynchburg has put forth multiple bypasses of their own to speed traffic along Route 29.
That's correct.
Culpeper has several. In fact, I read today that there's another one that they're trying to. I don't know if that's an internal. There was an article in one of the area newspapers about putting forth roundabouts and a bypass. I think that may be more internal, but there is at least one bypass on Route 29 heading north from the Charlottesville area up Route 29. And Charlottesville is the city, the area, that has fought this so steadily. Why is that? And it doesn't come down to a cemetery. It goes back for 20, 30 years now.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, I think that there are those there's a lot of opposition to building highways, especially in a community such as this. The Meadow Creek Parkway.
What do you mean by such as this?
A place where there are lots of nonprofits, there's lots of affluent people, there's lots of people who are ideologically opposed to roads one way or the other. And of course, you know, we saw this with the Meadow Creek Parkway for a long time. And what moved that forward was that there was a compromise where certain environmental groups realized that this was a road that made a lot of sense. With the Western Bypass, those opposition groups, those advocacy groups have not been on board with this project to date, and I don't see them coming on board anytime soon. And I think that that's just it. You know, I think that up in Culpeper, the Piedmont Environmental Council is one of those groups, and they are also opposed to a project up in Loudoun County called the Outer Beltway, which I think is on hold. And they make a lot of good points. They have alternatives that they would rather see done to fix existing 29. So, for instance, the idea of rather than build this bypass first, build grade-separated interchanges at, say, Hydraulic and 29, that's where Stonefield is now, up at Rio, they would say these will not change the landscape. We don't have to worry about the environmental effects. Let's do these things first and see if they work. And that was originally the compromise back in the 90s, but then we're getting into way too much detail.
All right, and we'll come back to that about how, because there are several groups that say that the funding for the Western Bypass should be applied to these other potential changes that would have what these other groups claim would be a more effective, not just a more effective expenditure of the money, but a better way to actually solve the problem. But let's go back to the more recent news, which is that the terminus, I keep using that official word, but the north end and the south end of the bypass need to be redrawn.
Or
do they need to be?
Well, that's a question that's ultimately going to be up to the Federal Highway Administration in terms of will they accept the Skanska Branch design. And that's, you know, but what's interesting is that since then, okay, so for anything major like this, VDOT has to, they have to hold public information meetings. And so they did this back in late May. They had the citizen information meeting where everybody got to see these three different designs. So the Skanska Branch design, this big flyover that would fly over the highway, and this loop that would get you up to the bypass without having to go through these lights. In other words, so they had this meeting, and of course, you know, you can just look at the design that Skanska Branch put forward, and you just know intuitively, even if you're not a transportation engineer, that it's going to have problems. You'd have to go up a steep 11% grade to get from Leonard Sandridge Road to the bypass.
Wait just a second. When you talk about intuitively, are you talking about the original design versus these other two?
Well, yes. By original, it's important to say the Skanska Branch design. That's the one that got Skanska and Branch to be able to have the low bid. Because, of course, these other two alternatives we're talking about involve a lot more road and a lot more bridge. So that's going to involve a lot more money.
So people were saying that there's a design flaw in this original Skanska Branch.
Yes.
And now we're talking about changes to the north and south end to overcome those. So tell me what people think are the design flaws, the flaw in the design.
Well, in terms of that one, so this there's a consultant working on the project called Parsons Brinckerhoff, and they conducted studies as part of this whole report. They did the studies, and at one point there were something like 8 different alternatives. But the two that they selected, when you run the traffic models, so for instance, in the Skanska branch design, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but from memory, I believe that the Skanska branch design would take an average of 158 seconds to get from existing 250 onto the bypass. So that's about what? That's over 2 minutes. So that would be because you have to wait at up to 2 lights to get up to that thing, to get up to the bypass, which kind of defeats the point. If the point of the bypass is to speed traffic and you're waiting in traffic to get to that quick little throughway, where at the other end, because there's problems with the other terminus potentially, and it's sort of defeats the purpose. So the Federal Highway Administration is going to look at those numbers and say, okay, this one is going to take 158 seconds, but this flyover is going to take about 40 or 50. I don't have it in front of me. So which is going to be more effective? Well, probably the flyover, but it's also probably going to cost about 30 million. Well, this is just a guess, but at least $30 million. Because again, you're talking about lifting a structure over top of an existing highway, which then changes the impacts on the University of Virginia's law school in Darden, St. Anne's Belfield, the Canterbury Neighborhood Association. All those stakeholders are affected. But it moves traffic along. So if you're Lynchburg and Danville, you just want that to happen. And that's what's interesting. There is the local, but we also do have folks down in Lynchburg who don't necessarily, who aren't opposed to this. They just want a faster way around Charlottesville.
All right, so we go back to the original Skanska branch. Again, by the way, our guest today, Sean Tubbs, from Charlottesville Tomorrow. He's a senior reporter. He's been covering the Western 29 bypass for 6 years now. Let's open up the phone lines, 434. It's 979-0919. I've only been saying that for about a double-digit number of years now. 979-0919. Call us up. Questions or comments for Sean and the Western 29 bypass. We'll be right back.
WNRN and Blue Mountain Brewery present the Red Wing Roots Music Festival, July 12th through 14th at Natural Chimneys Park in Mount Solon, Virginia. Hosted by the Steel Wheels and featuring Del McCurry Band, Sam Bush Band, Tim O'Brien, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, and J.D. McPherson. The full lineup and tickets can be found at redwingroots.com.
WNRN thanks Just Curry for their support of independent music radio. Just Curry is at 425 East Main Street on Charlottesville's downtown mall. Just Curry serves Indo-Caribbean curries with vegetarian options Monday through Saturday, now open for dinner on Friday. You can find Just Curry on Facebook.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for listening to WNRN. We are independent community radio. And let me take a moment. If you are interested in becoming the Wake Up Call producer, we're looking for a second producer for the show. If you have interest in the program, you're available to volunteer on Sundays, and you have a basic ability with computers, we can teach you the rest. Angie's going off to college. So email me, rmoore@wnrn.org, or stop by the station and let us know. All right, we got a call. Hang on. Dun da da. Randy, how are you? Randy, are you with me? Fire away, sir.
Okay, yeah. So I'm listening to your comments from the reporter this morning, and I have to say he is reasonably balanced about this overall issue. I noticed that he's been covering this for 6 years. I'm down in Lynchburg, and I think the thing to point out that might be overlooked a little bit is that this corridor improvement for US 29 for DC Metro down into the Greensboro area has been a long-term project over several decades. And when Lynchburg built its portion, it's a significant portion. Many of your listeners have traveled it probably from Amherst down to Lynchburg. The The bridge over the James River was a $110 million project, just the bridge alone, in 1999. And the agreement that was made between Danville, Lynchburg, and Charlottesville in the middle 90s was that each metro would put part of its six-year state highway money into this particular project in order to make it go forward. And Danville actually completed their segment first, actually, in the later 80s, early 90s. Lynchburg built its segment. When it came time for Charlottesville to build its segment, then there was a sticking point. So outside of the issues of the environmental impact and the locating of the road and the fact that the plan is now a decade or more out of date, the stakeholder issues in Charlottesville, as far as that sand bridge area and so forth, all of those issues can be satisfied to the satisfaction of most people. The crux of the issue is there's substantial opposition to simply building the thing at all. And the honest truth is the planners here in Lynchburg and Danville, and actually in the other states surrounding us, feel that Charlottesville out and out reneged on its obligation, the deal that it made, even to the point that there was an attempt in the legislature in the last several sessions to penalize Charlottesville monetarily for not upholding this portion of the project that they had committed to previously. So if the reporter would maybe touch on that a little bit, I mean, he seems very balanced about that overall. So I appreciate your time this morning taking my call.
All right. Thanks, Randy.
Yeah, thanks, Randy. I would love, if you can get in touch with me, I'd love to hear more about that deal. I've heard about that, but I've never been able to see anything in writing, and I'd love to, if that's possible.
And what's the best way?
I'm at stubs@seavilletomorrow.org.
And seavilletomorrow.org. You can read all the history of this as well. All right, back to Randy's comment.
But the last thing that Randy said was talking about the I believe it was State Senator Steve Newman at the time who had put forth legislation saying that if this project didn't go forward, the MPO here would have to pay back every single dollar of that money. So approximately prior to 2011, about $45, $46 million have been allocated to this. And as I said, they've bought up a lot of the road. They've got at least two-thirds of it. They paid about $33 million for that. And there was this effort, but at the time, and one of the reasons I think why you have to get into why local opposition changed was because there was this idea that the right of way would have to be sold, and that this area would not see that money. And but also too, there's also a provision in the state code that says after 20 years, if a project hasn't gone forward, you would have to then sell the project back. And it was getting back to that point. Gosh, I think it was 92 or 93 was when the first parcel was bought. Well, we were coming up to that point, and I think that's what helped convince supervisors Dwayne Snow and Rodney Thomas to push for this thing to go forward, because there was a sense that the money was going to run out. In terms of the deal, but you know, prior to this too, 29 is a problematic road in the middle part of the state. As Randy said, both Danville and Lynchburg built their bypasses. I should acknowledge too that I grew up in Lynchburg, so I'm well aware of my father in particular reminds me every single time he drives through Charlottesville of why we're completely wrong here. So I can understand that completely, but I think though that it's not just Charlottesville. I think if you look at between here and D.C. over the last, the state really kind of fell asleep at access management, I would say, in terms of not really realizing that you had this major highway going through, but locality after locality, including Albemarle, including Greene, Madison, putting traffic lights on them, and those traffic lights is then what creates the condition that you need to bypass later. So in terms of, you know, I mean, like, it's very doubtful that 29 is ever going to be an interstate caliber highway, because there's just all this stuff. And along all of these communities, there's going to be opposition to anything like that. So just going back to just one point, I think that people might argue on the bypass is that the difference between this alignment and the alignment down in Danville is that this one ends right at the beginning of Albemarle County's northern growth area. So it's south of Hollymead. So between Hollymead and the Albemarle border, you've got all this construction and development that's waiting to occur. So it's a bypass that really doesn't bypass anything, and that's going to be one of the questions and one of the oppositions. It doesn't do anything, but yet people in Lynchburg, I think, would take anything.
Right, and one of the what has become one of the regular arguments is that the northern end, the northern terminus of the planned bypass, while 30 years ago that was great, there wasn't any growth north of the Ravanna Bridge at 29, which is the planned, you know, start/end, whichever direction you're coming from. Now there's all sorts of growth there, like you mentioned, and there's only more expected growth.
Correct. Yes, and I think that's it. You know, if you look at Greene County, their comprehensive plan calls for clustering development on 29. So I think that, you know, it would, you know, I think in terms of long-term planning, the MPO is considering an extension of the bypass, but it's not a four-lane highway. It's only a two-lane highway. That's 20, 30, 40 years after this one gets built. So, you know, it's one of those things where this is why planning is important. I think if people in the 80s and if the 70s and 80s had been about preserving the corridor, we might have a different story or not have a story today.
Again, our guest, Sean Tubbs from Charlottesville Tomorrow. He's been covering the Western 29 bypass for several years now as a topic. 979-0919. Thanks again to Randy for giving us that call. It's nice to hear from someone outside of our immediate area who has a different viewpoint, a little different flavor to what's happening there. I appreciate our caller coming from Lynchburg. 979-0919. That's 434-979-0919. Talking about the Charlottesville 29 bypass. Sean, back to the current discussion about the change in the design. So the change in the design was given, it was accepted by VDOT, and then the discussions came up about how maybe that design won't work. I want to know how you accept a design that isn't going to function well. And then who pays for the change in the design?
Well, that's, you know, this is sort of the interesting thing. And I think that, you know, if you go back to 2011 and if you go back to the push to get this thing moving as fast as possible, because this was named as a high priority of the McDonnell administration through Secretary of Transportation Sean Connaughton. And, you know, at the time, it was decided to do what was called a design-build approach to putting out the construction bid, because it was seen that was the fastest way to get a contract in somebody's hands to get it moving as fast as possible. And so a total of nine firms, so what was called a request for proposals was put out in September of 2011. They came back, and the companies had about 7 months to work on it. When the bids came in, they ranged from $136 million, that was the Skanska branch, to approximately $220 million. And, you know, if you look at the different designs that they submitted, some of them submitted, this is for the Southern Terminus, some of them submitted this flyover ramp, or at least one of them did, you know, because at the time it was said, well, the private sector will figure out how to build the most affordable option possible, and that will be the one, because anytime you put out a bid, you have to take, you're compelled, the lowest qualified bid, you're compelled to take that lowest bidder. Well, what's interesting, and this has been underreported, it's in a couple of my stories, the one that came in second actually filed a protest against the Skanska branch and said, they're not meeting the objectives for this northern terminus. And then VDOT wrote back and said, we disagree. And then the other company basically, well, we disagree with you, but we're going to withdraw our complaint because, you know, we want to do business with you in the future type thing. So, so it was known that there were problems. This design comes in, but is it a design that can get federal approval? Well, this is where it gets kind of strange. I think that VDOT sort of just naturally assumed that everything was going to work out properly and that the Federal Highway Administration would grant this FONSI, pretty quickly. They were supposed to do it on January 7th. Skanska branch wrote and said, you know, we have to basically reassign our people because we've been anticipating to work on this project. So they're now 5 months behind. And then this cemetery thing shows up. I keep going back to that because that is the issue that's holding up the Federal Highway Administration granting this FONSI. So
a little bit more on the cemetery issue then.
Mm-hmm. Well, but before I go to that, because I think that the details of that are very important, but just in terms of the, and for lack of a better phrase, how this is playing out, the game of what this is, if the object is to build the road, in terms of that, so VDOT, Skanska Branch can't do any actual design work. So the entire thing is theoretical in a way. There's this template for how this road is to be built, but they can't actually go in and change anything officially. VDOT can't even communicate with Skanska Branch to... Skanska's trying to already, like, set up a new schedule. VDOT, well, we can't even talk to you about the schedule until we, you know, it's kind of like catch-22 in a way. But the cemetery issue, and we will talk about it, is holding things up in terms of that, because it's, but yet there's this interchange issue. We haven't even mentioned the Corps of Engineers has issues with it, and they have to grant another permit. So there's lots of different opposition. You don't just build a road when you have so many different jurisdictions.
Caller, hang on for a second. We have Mike on the line. Mike, hang on for just a minute for me. So what I heard from that was that these two organizations, VDOT and Skanska Branch, the design organization and the builder, can't even speak to one another until a third party says, yes, you can.
Well, they can speak to each other. They just can't do any work. And keep in mind that this is all transparent. This is all public documents once we submit a FOIA request. You know, we can see the money going. So for instance, Skanska has only been paid for those line items that they can be paid for. They can do geotechnical work. They can do a traffic study based on the northern terminus. They are consulting on the southern design, but they can't do any of the rest of the work. So this cemetery, which VDOT has already said that they're not going to move. They're going to move the road slightly around it and preserve it. They can't technically do the design, and they can't tell the descendants how the design is going to look. So it's this interesting dance, really.
All right, we have Mike on the line. Mike, you here?
Yes.
All right, your question or comment on the topic.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's obvious to many of us in Charlotte who have been following this over many years that this new plan is obsolete, you know, like we've already talked about on the show this morning. And our county supervisors, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Ken Boyd was key in pushing this to restart, should realize that. I mean, for this disturbing midnight vote to get it repushed, you know, restarted, you really have to wonder, you know, what old boy system is at work here to do this thing. I mean, it could have been redesigned, it could have been extended. But, no, there wasn't any talk about that. It was just one of those sneaky things that just really irks me and many citizens, I'm sure, in our area. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. So, Sean, as you do your studies on this, I mean, it's very apparent about, again, I go back to the very beginning, as we talk about the Route 29 Western Bypass with Sean Tubbs from Charlottesville tomorrow. The plan to push it forward happened at midnight, and I don't understand how people who are proponents of this can be okay with that method of making it happen. But there are other political issues that people have pointed out. There was the gentleman who was kicked off one of the boards because he came out and said he didn't like the plan. Talk a little about the politics that go along with this.
Sure. Well, what's interesting, okay, so in the state of Virginia, any major projects, everything, the budget for the Virginia Department of Transportation has to be approved by a body known as the Commonwealth Transportation Board. And throughout the entire history of this bypass, they're sort of like the body that has voted to move it forward, beginning back in 1990 when they chose... It was in 1990 when this alignment got chosen. At the time, there were other places that the road could have gone, but this particular alignment that we've been talking about now for almost 25 years was picked then by the Transportation Board. Flash forward now to 2013, actually 2012 now. So our representative was a man named Jim Rich. He's a Republican who had previously served on this board back in the 90s. He came on board and he was opposed to it from the beginning. So he's been consistently the only vote against this. He's lobbied against it. So in other words, if you think about this Commonwealth Transportation Board as being a deliberative body, he's the only one who was bringing forth any debate.
And his reason? Was it finances? Was it efficiency?
Well, basically everything I think that a lot of folks in the opposition have been saying, that it's obsolete. And like our last caller, for instance, that it's obsolete, it's not going to move anything forward, and it's the worst decision. Some of his counterparts, though, so for instance, a man named Mark Peek, who was Lynchburg's representative on the Commonwealth Transportation Board, he said at the time, and I think that this is a sentiment that I think that Randy would probably agree to, is that this is what we have. It might not be the best road, but we're this far along. We're this close to getting this thing built. Let's move forward with this one, and we'll fix the problems later.
We need to do something.
Exactly. But you know, I think, though, that's really kind of where it is. And I think it's, you know, as an observer of this sort of thing, that's kind of, you know, is that what does happen in that particular situation. But I think that there are some people who I think are in the middle, some people who are resigned to this happening. So, for instance, some people in the Forest Lakes Association who served on Ken Boyd's task force, his design task force for this, you know, also said, we're going to have to live with this at the northern end. Let's have it be the best road for us so it works, so we can get out of our neighborhood. Because right now, there are a lot of people in that neighborhood who are concerned that the northern terminus is going to cut them off or force them to wait a very long amount of time to get out of their neighborhood, because that's right where the bypass ends.
And Jim Rich, you were talking about, he's the only representative to stand up against it. He was
let go.
Whether he was asked to leave or forced to leave?
He technically resigned, but it was more or less said, we want you to go. Because he serves at the, you know, because, and this was, you know, it's, he would go to these meetings and like where the bypass wasn't already on the agenda, he would point out, it says, hey, he would say to the other members of the transportation board, he says, look, I got a project that's $200 million over here. Out there in the Hampton Roads area, you're having problems with potholes. You're having all these problems with the Midtown Tunnel. Take our money. You know, it's like, I have this project in my district I don't want. Take it. And nobody, of course, took him up on that. You know, I think that the Commonwealth Transportation Board, at least in my observation of it, is run sort of, it's not really a board for dissent. And that's very clear when Mr. Rich was let go or resigned. He has not been replaced.
All right. Martin, I know you're on the line. Hang with me. 11:38. I need to do a little business again. This is WNRN.
And support for WNRN today comes from the Markets of Tiger Fuel Company, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street.
Support for independent music radio WNRN comes from locally owned Pack and Mail in the Pantop Shopping Center just down from Food Line, Route 250 East, at the foot of Pantop's Mountain. Pack and Mail is a one-stop shipping and mailing store with packing services, supplies, and moving boxes. Online at sevilleshop.com/pantops.
Hi, I'm Katie Bland from N Station Theater Company. We invite you to enjoy William Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew. This show will be performed on the campus of Sweetbriar College June 15th to July 7th. Six vaudeville performers from the turn of the century bring this madcap classic comedy about love and marriage to life. Through the fun and energy of vaudeville performance styles, audiences meet the residents of Padua as they employ Petruchio to tame their infamous shrew, Caterina. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit nstationtheater.org or call 434-826-0391. I'm Katie Bland, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection@WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for listening today. And also, if you're interested in being a guest for a current events roundtable I'm going to put together, email me, rmoore@wnrn.org. Again, our guest today, Sean Tubbs. And let's find out how patient our listener Martin is. Hey, Martin.
I'm very patient.
Well, thank you so much. Martin here, participating by the phone. You got a question or a comment?
I have a comment, and basically it's, I think Mr. Tubbs perpetuates a certain against the bypass in his, I think he's relatively balanced, but for example, just to sit there and let people talk about the midnight vote like something evil happened, in which reality was there was a 3-3 vote previously. And that vote, and between that vote and the other vote, Sean Connaughton called Lindsay Doyer and said, if you reconsider your vote, not only will we give you all the money for the bypass, but we'll give you $30 million to widen 29, we'll give you money for various other projects, and, you know, Mr., you know, you didn't get any money here for decades. And he simply change his vote. The lateness of the hour really has nothing to do with it, because there would have been no additional public hearing, there was no additional public comment, and the midnight vote is simply one man, Lindsay Doyer, changing his vote. And and for some reason this is, begins to be some sort of evil. The people who voted the same way the first time, Ken Boyd and Dwayne Snow and Roddy Thomas, simply kept their votes exactly the same, and you know, they didn't, you know, nothing nefarious happened, but they loved to talk about it like something nefarious happened. And the other thing, you know, Sean is talking about, well, intuitively, you know, this design is bad. And I don't know about you, but having public policy decided by intuition is a terrible idea. And I look down and you say the bypass doesn't pass anything, and it does bypass. It bypasses 16 lights. And I think Charlottesville tomorrow has been relatively balanced, but I think given that their founder's wife is one of the largest, Sonia Smith is one of the largest contributors to people who are against the bypass, I think it's a bit cute to pretend that you're completely balanced, and I'd like your comment.
Well, Martin, let me jump in real quick while I give Sean a chance to think about that, is that I think I have pushed the idea that it was a nefarious vote, because I do believe that. If you can't put the topic on the agenda for the public to come, and maybe it's the same people showing up again a week later, but I think if you don't allow the public the opportunity to know that you're going to vote on it again, then I think that is a bit nefarious. Now, that was my point, not Sean, so let Sean answer to your question. Go ahead, Sean.
Sure. Well, it's fun to be called cute, so thank you for that. But I would say, in terms of the balance, in terms of my role, you know, I see my role as a, you know, as a reporter, I've chosen a profession where I don't get to have an opinion. My trust, or hopefully people's trust in me, is based on the product. And you know, I think in terms of, I'll talk about the vote. I think what Rick had just said about that, you know, I think it was the fact that it was not announced at the beginning of the meeting. They had to suspend their own rules in order to hear it. Because at that point there was a rule on the agenda that said you had to basically vote to put something on the agenda.
And when was that rule passed, Mr. It was passed
about a week or two before.
Correct.
It was about a week or two before, or it might have been that meeting.
So this is a brand new rule, and they slightly made a difference. And if it had been at the beginning of the meeting, what would have been the difference?
I think that people would have been prepared for it. But
wouldn't the vote have not? It ended exactly the same as it had been at 7 o'clock.
Yeah. And I think you have a good point. Like, in terms of your other point where you said that the deal was made and the transportation funding did flow. It did. And we reported that, I think, about at the Commonwealth Transportation Board.
But what makes it nefarious than if it happened at 7 o'clock or 11:30? To say a midnight vote makes it seem something evil, where if it had happened at 7, nothing would have changed, and you wouldn't have the narrative of, it was a midnight vote.
Well, I think it's, you know, I would say late night vote. I think it's just basically, it's significant. I think it's significant any time public policy is made at that time.
And why was it made at that time? Wasn't that a continuous meeting and they were doing the people's business up until then? I mean, the hour, if it had happened at 7, the decision would have been the same. So you're contradicting your own argument there about the hour. I mean, if the decision's the same, the time should not matter.
Well, I'm not really making an argument. I'm just pointing out that it happened at this time off the agenda. I mean, people can make their own conclusions. I would say, in that case, you know, and I'm not making those conclusions.
I am.
Yeah, but
don't confuse us, Martin. I'm the one who's making the nefarious conclusion.
Because anything's fair game. I mean, let's be honest. Anything's fair game in a meeting. I think that's the power of democracy. When we entrust people with the power to make decisions, it's up to them how they make those decisions.
All right, but what do you have to say about the fact that your founder's wife.
All right, Martin. I think we're stepping outside of today's topic, which is the Western 29 bypass, and not necessarily where funding for organization groups come from. That's another show, Martin. R. Moore at WNRN.org for the community roundtable involving local citizens. All right, and but I'm gonna let other people have an open phone line, 979-0919. Again, that's 434-979-0919. Martin, I'd love you getting us into a couple other topics, but I have firm belief that a couple of these are outside of the stretch for today's show. Again, R. Moore at WNRN.org. If you'd like to participate in the community roundtable, I hope to put together later this summer. All right, back with our guest, Sean Tubbs, senior reporter at Charlottesville Tomorrow, as we talk about the 29 bypass. Sean, let's go back to some of the politics involved. Martin brought up whether the vote was fair or not. So let's go back to another part of the whether or not it's a politically devious set, which is Jim Rich talking about him as being the only member of the Commonwealth Transportation Board who was against the project, and he stepped down. But he also said that the Secretary of Transportation, Sean, pronounce his last name for
Connaughton,
said that he didn't provide all the information, that he had information that he did not provide to others before a vote was taken.
Well, it's interesting, you know, in terms of that was information that we obtained through a third party who actually had filed the FOIA request at that point. But internal documents reviewed by the central headquarters at VDOT had shown that that the true estimate of the road, if built according to the plans from 1995-97 or so, those are the plans that had previously been voted or approved and voted on, that it would have cost about $436 million. But, you know, again, that the at the time, there was a significant amount of money, because one of the issues of, okay, if we go back to when the road was dormant, one of the arguments made by the opponents, but also supported by the proponents of it, was that the fact that there was little chance that this area was going to get $200 million to build this road. You know, it saved up its money for years and years and years. The reason why the Meadow Creek Parkway took a long time, because it's a different kind of road. That's a secondary road. But that was their transportation fund. It was doubtful that this money was going to come through. Well, suddenly you had a different administration come in, and they decided that this was something that was a high priority for them, and they found funding for it. And if you look back, this was a high trend. This was a high priority, you know, because again, Lynchburg, Danville, they want this road, and they're fully justified in wanting this road and wanting something to happen. Going back to what Martin said, it does do something. It will do something. The question is the design going to be the best to actually achieve that? At least, and my role as the reporter is basically just to hopefully let people know these are the decision points. This is what's going on. This is where we are right now. And I do want to tie it back to where we are right now. We're at a point right now where this project is 5 months behind schedule, at least 5 months behind schedule. One document that I've uncovered shows that an internal document, which I have to verify. I know it comes from VDOT, but do they really believe this? A 90-day delay adds $5 million to the project, because there's like something like 266 tasks that Skanska Branch cannot do. They can't even start it until this federal recognition comes through. And that could be several months from now still, because this cemetery, which we haven't really talked about, which I do encourage you for a future show, that's a whole other topic about African-American history, separate from the bypass. It's a very interesting topic that is sort of the new information that has been found, because it wasn't really realized how significant this area was till now. So you have all these problems, and my job is not to fight this road or to attack this road or stop this road. It's just simply to report the public debate about how it's moving forward, because a lot of it is off the scenes, and I just find it fascinating as a citizen.
All right, I see Gary's on the line. Gary, hang on for just a second. because we need to thank folks who support WNRN.
WNRN is supported by Jefferson Theater, presenting The Vaccines with the Drowners Wednesday, June 12th. London-based indie rock outfit The Vaccines brings their music to Charlottesville. Tickets for the June 12th show are at jeffersontheater.com. The Vaccines, Wednesday at the Jefferson Theater. State Farm agent Larry Whitlock joins our members in support of WNRN. State Farm agents understand insurance and share a genuine concern for others. Larry Whitlock helps people in the Charlottesville area find products for their insurance and financial needs. From homeowners, renters, and car insurance to retirement planning, Larry is at 101 East High Street, 434-971-9966, or at LarryWhitlockAgency.com.
And tickets for the Interlochen Music Festival feature Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Further, Black Crowes, Widespread Panic, John Fogerty, String Cheese Incident, and more are on sale now. Interlochen is donating a portion of every ticket sold through WNRN.org to Independent Music Radio, WNRN. Just click through the Interlochen banner on our website, use the promo code WNRN, and when you buy your tickets to the Interlochen Music Festival coming to Nelson County, September 5th through the 8th, you'll be making a donation to the station. Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Further, Black Crowes, Zach Brown, String Cheese Incident, and Widespread Panic. Get your tickets at WNRN.org. All right, it's 11:51 here on WNRN. Never enough time for a topic like the Western Bypass. Our guest, Sean Tubbs, he's the senior reporter at Charlottesville Tomorrow. And we got Gary. Hey, Gary.
Hello. Hello. Let's see. I'm a native. I'm all Charlottesvillean. And part of the process that bothers a lot of people I talk to, especially myself, is one reason some of this funding come in is there are a lot of people to benefit who own or are connected with heavy equipment operating, you know, businesses and what have you. And they kind of jumped on the wagon when other development started, you know, 20, 15 years ago, what have you. And at our expense, you know, instead of widening 29 and kind of, you know, slowing growth and having at least controlled growth, sensible growth, instead of just, let's just take the money and roll with it. And I'm sorry about the people that, you know, like you said, it is wrong that Lynchburg and Danville, you know, did something that just, you know, thought was going to happen. The domino effect would, you know, fall into place in a proper business fashion. But the thing is, maybe we had more to lose in the environmental impact. And yes, I am concerned about that. And just looking at the chaos that the Meadow Creek Parkway is creating, having something like this built for very little benefit of, like you said, it's only going to bypass a little bit of something anyway, and that takes a bite at the other callers, but, you know, if people want, you know, to overbuild this area, then they're going to have the consequences, and I see I just see it creating more damage, this bypass, anyway. But back to the part that's not fair to us is people that are invested in it. Like there are some people on the board that are connected to a financial benefit.
Hey, Gary, I want Sean to go into that a little bit. Thanks for bringing that up.
Okay.
Sean, have you found during your research for your story, CharlottesvilleTomorrow.org, that there are folks who have that interconnectedness?
The interconnectedness, nothing that I've uncovered. I would say, you know, I mean, like, I only have to go by what the supervisors in Favorite have told me. And, you know, I think that Mr. Boyd has said for years that this is a project that he's always pushed for. But it's also interesting. Before this project got resurrected, he also wanted to bring and I'm not making an inference here, but I'm just pointing out that chronologically, about within a year of this happening, he had held a town hall meeting up at the Forest Lakes area, wanting to move the area of the road to the west of to the west of Forest Lakes to move that into the growth area so that developer Wendell Wood could produce, could build another shopping center. And in exchange, he was going to help build another road in this community called Berkmar Road Extended. That was prior to this happening. Well, that didn't go through because he agreed to support the will of his constituents who did not want that to happen. That didn't move forward. Now, I'm not connecting any of those, but, you know, but a lot of the land that this will pass through will benefit somebody. As I said, Mr. Wood is the predominant landowner in that area. The Moonies are also own a place up there. In terms of Supervisor Thomas, I think he would say he's a local who's been here for a long time. He has supported the road, and he has always pointed back to me and said, well, I did get the funding. You know, we got the funding for the Best Buy ramp. We got the funding for the Belmont Bridge replacement, widening of 29, Hillsdale Drive connection, the extension. Those projects are all funded, for the most part. But going back to Dwayne Snow, I think that Dwayne Snow is somebody who has told me he remembers living in Charlottesville in the 50s when the 250 bypass was built, the existing 250 bypass that's now being transformed by the Meadow Creek Parkway interchange that the last caller just referred to. He would probably argue that this is a necessary thing, that it's that is probably going to hurt our community in the short term, but in the long run, it's for the best. And I think that that's been his position consistently. What's going to be interesting for me in terms of covering them is how much more willing are they to pay for this project, and that how are they going to secure the money for what I'm going to tell you right now, the cost of this project is going to increase. And that is a claim I'm making, definitely. But I think it's just pointing at the fact that the existing design for the southern terminus is going to have to be changed to either that flyover ramp or this loop ramp that they've sampled and have shown to the public now at that meeting in May. The cost is going to go up, and how much is it going to come close to that $436 million estimate that I referred to earlier? Probably not. But is it going to be more than the $244 million currently allocated? Probably. And that's going to be one of the issues. Is the next governor going to support that? Because probably at this point, that decision is being pushed forward.
Just a couple minutes left with our conversation for Sean Tubbs. Again, we'll be posting this podcast, SevillePodcast.com.
I've heard of that.
You have Seville Public Media. You can find us on WNRN.org now. Sean, just 2 minutes left, and I keep my question on this keeps getting pushed back, although you keep bringing it up, is the graveyard. I believe it's the Sammons Farm Cemetery.
Yes. So Jesse Sammons was a man. He died fairly young. He died before he was 50. He was the descendant of freed slaves who had settled. They had moved up north to the Rio Mills area, what was the Hydraulic Mills area. It was a freed black community after the Civil War. He was an educator. I believe he was principal of the Albemarle Training Center for a year. He died early. He's buried there. He's directly, and I don't know the exact connections. This isn't my area of expertise. But Councilor Dee Dee Smith, City Councilor Dee Dee Smith, spoke recently about this, at the African American Heritage Center at the Jefferson School. But just in general, it's a whole area, and it's going to change how we perceive this community's history.
But you can't build anything in this area without disturbing some archaeological, historical
But it's still an open question because the way it ended up happening is that this was a family that basically during the Jim Crow era, they had to leave. They would have settled there and stayed there, but they didn't feel like they could actually eke out a living here because and again, this is a part of history I don't know that much about. I don't think any of us really know about. So they left the area and they sold it, and then are just now finding out about it. So they're just discovering. There's a professor at MIT, Dr. Erica James. She's an anthropologist who has been instrumental in sort of getting her family's awareness because when VDOT got the land, what moved with that deed was in perpetuity the family's right to go to that cemetery, and so. That's
VDOT is talking about, real quick, 5 seconds, VDOT is talking about changing the design of the road so it doesn't disturb the cemetery.
They are not going to relocate the cemetery.
All right. You're going to have a new article on this?
Yeah, sometime this week. It'll be about the timing of the bypass and sort of a lot of the stuff I've talked about here, but didn't really go into too much detail.
All right. Thanks to all the callers. Again, SeavillePodcast.com, WNRN.org. You can find the podcast posted. rmoore@WNRN.org if you want to join the show as a citizen for a roundtable talk. Thanks, Sean.
Oh, thank you very much.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com. or wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Angie Cruz. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.